104.5 The Zone. WGFX Gallatin, Nashville. A Cumulus station.
Coach, we are brought to you, of course, by Farm Bureau Health Plans. Coach Dave McGinnis joins me each Saturday morning, and we're going to talk, well, we're going to talk like two coaches, coach to coach. All topics will center around football, both college and professional. And Dave, plenty to talk about, all the happenings since, well, our statewide show ended a couple of weekends ago. Let's start with the NFL Divisional Championship games. One of the things that struck me, Dave McGinnis, was the fact that only 32 points, that was the highest point scored that was put up by any of the four teams offensively, and all the losing teams failed to score 21 points. Now, in a year of a lot of scoring, a lot of offensive play, a lot of offensive coaches coaching, and certainly a lot of big-time quarterbacks, a little surprising to me. How about you?
You know what, Coach? Talking about the playoffs are played and coached differently than the regular season, the National Football League. Because during a 17-week National Football League season, you know that regardless of the outcome of what goes on a Sunday or a Monday or a Thursday or whenever you play, that you've got another chance. You have no other chance in the National Football League. The National Football League is the only professional sporting franchise that has a one-and-done playoff system. Everybody else, either 3 out of 5, 4 out of 7, 2 out of 3, you know, whatever you want to say. But the National Football League, you're one and done. So really what you do see, and it's been my experience over my 31 years of coaching in the league and being in the playoffs, you know, multiple times, is that teams get conservative. They get conservative, and they don't quite open it up as much offensively. And you're right, 32 points was the highest point total scored. That was scored by the Green Bay Packers against, you know, the Los Angeles Rams. And the point about that game, Doug, that was the number one scoring offense in the league. You would expect that. But the Rams were the number one scoring defense in the league. The number one scoring defense in the league. And so the most points were put up in the divisional games against the number one scoring defense in the league. And so what that tells you when you look at it, if you really want to break down the game and start looking at really what happened, the Rams defense is really concentric and built on their ability to pressure with four people. And the big one of those four is Aaron Donald. Well, Aaron Donald, you know, having the rib injury that he had going into that ball game, of course, you know, he said all week, it's not going to bother me. I'm going to be ready to play. I was there when the Rams, when we drafted Aaron Donald. I know how tough he is. I know what a great player he is, but he was not himself. And so the Packers were able to take advantage of that. And everybody wants to talk about the quarterback, you know, Aaron Rodgers in that game. And he was very proficient, but they had three running backs that really ran the ball very, very well. And so that was a game where 32 points were scored, but it was against the number one defense in the National Football League.
We're going to look at each one of these games and, of course, a little later talk about the conference championship games that the winners will be playing tomorrow. But, Dave, let me just kind of dig a little bit deeper on what you were talking about. So into the playoffs, it's been your experience, and you spent so many leagues in the year, so many years in the league. It's your experience more of maybe offenses pulling in a little bit more so than defenses just stepping it up more?
You know, and to me, it is. It's offenses pulling it in a little bit more because what you're looking at, you're not quite as ready to freewheel once you get into – if you'll watch all of these games, these four games we're talking about, these divisional games, the teams that won it, they were able to run the football. They were able to run the football, and that's extremely important to know. As much as we talk about, you know, throwing the football in the National Football League, which it is, it's a wide open game. It is, but still the basis of football, as you and I know from all the years that we've coached, you know, in the collegiate game, in the National Football League, you still have to be able to win the line of scrimmage. And so the line of scrimmage is really important in these playoff games. Look at Buffalo-Baltimore. Let's just look at Buffalo-Baltimore. Baltimore was the number one rushing team in the National Football League, the number one rushing team in the National Football League. Well, that ball game was 3-3 at halftime. It was 3-3 at halftime. And really the difference in that game, Coach, when you really start looking at it, Les Frazier, the defensive coordinator of the Buffalo Bills, he blitzed nearly 50% of the time in that game to stop the run. He wasn't blitzing Lamar Jackson for the throws. He was blitzing. He was run blitzing to stop the run, and then he was playing the pass on the way through of playing the run with the run blitzes. And so that was very, it was a 3-3 game at halftime. And so what you saw was, with the continued pressure that Les Frazier was bringing as the defensive coordinator of the Buffalo Bills, that sooner or later, Lamar Jackson could not win the game through the air. He needed the running game to be proficient, to be able to win it. And because of the pressure that Les Frazier was bringing, and Les Frazier normally is a zone defensive coordinator. It's what he was consistently, but he upped his pressures so much throughout this ball game that it ended up being a 17-3 contest.
Kind of looking at some of the games, you mentioned the Ravens games. We had two of the eight teams who finished the game, Mac, without their quarterback in there. Let's talk a little bit about, we know what happened with the Ravens. They get beat 17-3, but then the Chiefs, I thought the best game of the day, 22-17, went down to the final play of the game. And again, we had a starting quarterback get hurt, but a little bit different from the Chiefs standpoint than it was from the Ravens standpoint.
Well, that absolutely was, because let's just talk about this. Both of these quarterbacks are very, very vital to the success of their football teams, but in different ways. The Baltimore Ravens, when Lamar Jackson went out of the ball game, they didn't have anybody else to come in that could do athletically, you know, what he could do with the run game, and everything that Greg Roman, who is the offensive coordinator for the Baltimore Ravens, does is built on the quarterback being the primary runner, and then being able to run some RPOs off of the run game. Well, once that quarterback went out, they had nobody. Their backup quarterback could not come in, and he could not come in and emulate what was going on there. Now, the Kansas City Chiefs were a different story. Patrick Mahomes is a beautiful young talent. He's a great young talent. But Andy Reid has a backup in Chad Henne that can still run his offense, especially throwing it. You don't get all the off-schedule stuff with Henne, clearly, that you get with Mahomes. He's not anywhere near the athlete. He doesn't have anywhere near the whip-like arm that he does. But once Mahomes went out of the ball game, and we could see the evidence of this, Doug, when you watch that fourth down play that they had to have, they didn't just try to grind it out. They had Henne throw it, you know, because Andy Reid trusts Chad Henne to be able to do that part of it. So their offense didn't suffer as much as Baltimore's offense did when their starting quarterback went out of the game.
Talking about quarterbacks, and we're going to be talking about a bunch of quarterbacks throughout these playoffs. We have been. But look at those eight teams, Mac, and certainly the Packers, the Bucks, and the Saints, Hall of Fame quarterbacks already. You would think that probably Patrick Mahomes is close to being there, if not. And then we had four teams with really, well, Hall of Fame type players. And then other three, Browns, we know Baker Mayfield is getting better. Let's just talk a little bit about, though, in these playoff games. Certainly have to play well overall. You don't get there if you're not a good football team, let's face it. But was there a player or two non-quarterback wise, and I've got one in mind, a defensive back they call the Honey Badger from the Chiefs, that really stood out in this game?
No, absolutely, and I think you're right. I think Tyrann Mathieu really did stand out. But to me, if you want to talk about parts of it, I thought the two edge players, the two Smiths, the Darius and Preston Smith, that play for Green Bay, had a huge part in their victory. They really did, because they were able to keep Cam Akers is the running game for the Rams, and those two edge guys, they were able to funnel everything inside. That was big to me. Those guys played extremely, extremely well.
Well, as I said, we're going to talk a lot of football on these shows. By the way, we're going to have 32 straight weeks of this. As you know, Dave McGinnis and I, along with Larry Stone, do a 20-week during football season. Little different this year because the season was started a little bit later. We do a statewide show. Then Coach Mack and I, the other 32 weeks, are going to do a show here on 104.5 The Zone that we're going to talk football and a lot of different topics as we go through this in the remaining 31 weeks. We'll have some coaches on with us, and we'll try to give you some information from a coaching perspective on, well, maybe some things to look at and maybe learn a little bit. I may learn a little bit from Dave McGinnis also. Anyway, we'll be talking about those through the show. All right, we're going to talk about the championship games a little bit later in the show, but when we come back from break, University of Tennessee, the Vols have a new athletic director, Dr. Danny White. We're going to tell you all about it when we return. This is Farm Bureau Health's Coach to Coach.
You care for the house.
Fall season is here and expectations are high. This is Ronnie Bowling of Brentwood Hearing Center. Meeting your expectations of better hearing is always the goal of our doctors of audiology. From diagnosis to demonstration to providing you the most recent device technology, we're determined to exceed your expectations of a tailored hearing solution. Give us a call today at 615-377-0420 or learn more at BrentwoodHearingCenter.com. We hope to see you soon.
Hey, all you sports fans.
As a small business owner, I don't have time for health plan problems. So when I signed up for the wrong coverage, I wished I had a rewind button. As a small business owner, I don't have time for health plan problems. So I talked to Farm Bureau Health Plans. They helped me choose the right plan for less. And you can sign up any time of the year. Go to FBHP.com or talk to your local representative today. Farm Bureau Health Plans. Plan on us.
And dog lovers, it's Mike Keith. When it's time for the big game, big fans need big TVs. And at Double Dogs, you can even satisfy big appetites. With choices like Black Angus burgers, wings tossed in homemade sauces, and dog bowl nachos, Double Dogs will make sure that you have the fuel you need at lunch or dinner while never having to miss a game. So whether you have two legs or four, you can cheer on and chow down at Double Dogs, located in cities across Tennessee.
And now,
sponsored by Farm Bureau Health.
This is Coach to Coach. We are brought to you by Farm Bureau Health Plans. Dave, let's talk a little bit about new athletic director, University of Tennessee. Happened quickly. The change was made in the head football coach at Tennessee earlier this week. Athletic director Philip Fulmer said that he would retire as soon as a new AD was hired, and well, it happened quickly. Let's talk a little bit about Dr. Danny White. He is a name known throughout football. He's been the athletic director at the Central Florida since 2015, started at the University of Buffalo. We're going to talk about a few more of those things. By the way, I'll get into this hot and heavy Sunday morning on Big Orange Sunday. But Mac, Dad, Kevin White, the athletic director at Duke, brother, Mike White, the University of Florida Gators head basketball coach. He has another brother and a sister who is in athletic administration. I wonder what these people talk about on Thanksgiving dinner.
Yeah, you talk about coaches that come in that come from a football family. Well, this is clearly an administrative family. I think the sister is at SMU. So they've got some very, you know, prestigious jobs throughout that family. And you're absolutely right. I mean, this is a family in the collegiate world that is very well known, you know, for their acumen in the administrative part of it. And so it's pretty unique. But again, as I say, we always talk about in the coaching world about, you know, he comes from a football family. Well, this group comes from an administrative family.
Young man, right around 40, maybe 40, 41, early 40s. And Mac, you told me something I did not know. Rarely do you tell me something I don't know about college football. Often you tell me something I know about pro football. What, the highest paid athletic director in Florida? And good gosh, there's got to be about 15 of them down there, doesn't there?
Well, I mean, clearly it shows you what they thought of him there at Central Florida. Of course, you know, they won that mythical national championship with him there, and he's the one that expounded on it and promoted it quite a bit. But, I mean, he was making more money than any athletic director of any public university in the state of Florida, which really, when you start to think about it, because, I mean, you've got an ACC, you've got SEC teams there, and it really tells you what the University of Central Florida thought about him. Him, the job that he did and the job that he was going to do there. And if I'm not mistaken, Coach, and you know much more about this than I do, he had a pretty hefty buyout too, to be able to. So he was a hot item. He was a very sought after item, but he was an item that was very important to their success there at Central Florida.
Danny White, Dr. Danny White. I don't know that Tennessee's had an athletic director that had a PhD, probably did somewhere in there. maybe not official, but several of them had PhDs in coaching football. Again, much more about that discussion I'll have come Sunday on Big Orange Sunday. That starts at 8 o'clock right here on 104.5 The Zone. While we're talking a little college football, Mac, let's talk about the, well, the Alabama-Ohio State game. Going into the game, I know you and I visited about this often during the year. It was an unusual year. We're going to discuss with Coach Mack a little bit later. How do you really evaluate this past season with the COVID-19 dominated decisions and all of that, both in college and pros? But Mack, let's start with the game. I don't think even the folks that really dislike the University of Alabama, I think you'd have to admit clearly they were the best team in the country this year. They won easily. They beat Notre Dame easily in the semifinal. And, of course, against Ohio State, 52-24. And it was about that type of ball game, actually, about what the score indicated.
You know, Coach, when you and I, you know, did the 20-week coach-to-coach during the season, and we talked through, you know, a lot of collegiate football, and we really talked the Southeastern Conference. But in this year, as you said, as different as it was, we really talked about just how people were just measuring up. I know we'll talk about this later. Let's set aside how each university handled the COVID situation, but just on the field, when you were watching, and we were both watching the University of Alabama week to week to week, we said, this is a really good football team, and going with an all Southeastern Conference schedule, this might be the best football team Nick Saban has had there. And that's saying quite a bit, because he's had some tremendous national championship teams there and some good teams that were in it that didn't win it. And so to me, when we really started looking at them coming off of last year, we thought the thing last year that kept Alabama from really being as dominant as you and I both have seen before, and we talked about this quite a bit on Coach to Coach, is that we thought their defense wasn't quite up to par. Well, this year they played Alabama defense, but the ability of their skill people and what they were able to do, and what Sarkisian, the offensive coordinator, was able to do as far as manipulating other defenses, it really was a runaway most games that they played. And it didn't surprise me, and I know it didn't surprise you, because we not only talked about it on air, we would talk about it a lot off air. That was a great football team that the University of Alabama had, a great football team.
Well, without question, Ohio State, when they lost Sermon, the running back, I think on the first carry that he had, I believe, he goes out. We know that Fields had the hit in the Clemson game. But, you know, Mac, we discussed this. We're too old, or OLE, let's put it that way. I'm old, you're OLE, defensive guys. But when you build your offense around a quarterback, which everybody's doing now, if they're a little bit off, if they don't have quite the game throwing, and that's what happens to Fields, then you're in trouble. And they really had nothing to go to the longer the game went.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Sermon going out early had a big impact on them, because the game before, he was impressive. He was extremely impressive. And so let's morph that over to the other side of Alabama. You know, Mac Jones, if Mac Jones had a bad day throwing it, which he never did have very many of them, he had a stable of backs to hand it to back there. And they would use it. It was as well balanced a football team offensively as I've seen in a long time. And really, the Heisman Trophy winner went out after the first half, Coach. I mean, he was out after the first half, and they still were able to make those big, big splash plays. They make those big chunk plays, you know, with the receivers that they had going in there. They had Waddle in there that was on one leg that was playing, that was open on a lot of routes that he was running. So just the volume of excellent players that Nick Saban had. And then to me, and again, I've said this before to you, and I'll say it to our listeners this weekend on Coach to Coach, talking about this, they're one of the most well-coached teams in the country. One of the most well-coached teams in the country. When you start looking at scheme, you start looking at fundamentals, and you start looking at consistency.
Mac, you just think about this. Now, it's easier, nothing's easy, but easier for a quarterback to dominate a game, and at some times running back. But just think about this. In the college football playoffs, where arguably you got the four best teams in the country. That's hopefully what you have when you get there. I think this year was pretty darn close, maybe in one or two that could have argued that a little bit. But just think about this. In two games, and actually in six quarters, Devontae Smith as a wide receiver caught 27 passes. Caught 27 passes. Think about that. And the other thing was, and this is going to get into, we're going to talk about Sarkisian going to Texas and what he did at Alabama. But the other part was this. The thing that Alabama, I thought, did better than anybody else in the country this year offensively, they got the ball to their playmakers. 49% of the plays, let's just round it off to 50%, half of the plays, either Najee Harris or Devontae Smith had the ball in their hands, and those are your two best players. Obviously, the quarterback, the first-team All-American quarterback, but that's how you score points. You get the ball to your playmakers, and in a national championship game for two guys, and one of them went a quarterback, either one of them were a quarterback, to have the ball 50% of the time, that's excellent play calling, excellent game planning, and excellent game execution.
Well, it really is. And you know, as we talked on Coach to Coach during the season, we'd talk about, you know, teams that would struggle. And then we would look at the box score, and you'd see their best players had not touched the ball very much on offense. And so I agree with you so much on this. And the important thing to know about this is opponents knew, and Ohio State was a good football team. Let's not lose sight of that. Ohio State was a really good football team with excellent, excellent athletes and good coaching, too. I mean, it was an excellent football team, but the creativity and the way that you're able to manipulate a defense and get the ball to those playmakers in a variety of ways, that's what really good coaching is. And it's being able to layer your offense as an offensive coordinator and layer your calls that allows you to do that.
Let's take just while we're talking about Alabama, talk a little bit about, as we mentioned, Steve Sarkisian goes to Texas. We're going to spend a little segment here on new hires a little bit later. But one of the things, Mac, that you've talked about with me individually as we talk through things, one of the attributes is the way I'd put it for Nick Saban is that he is able to attract good coaches. What we've had since then, Bill O'Brien, who was let go mid-year by the Houston Texans, and Doug Marrone, head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars, both will be coaching at Alabama. Now, they've signed up to coach. There are some jobs opening that they possibly could get, but I'm talking about head jobs. Talk a little bit about why coaches want to go. Even these two guys both of them have had a couple of pro jobs. Head jobs. O'Brien was at Penn State. Why, seemingly, is it kind of a mecca for coaches who have been fired or out of coaching, have had some problems, to come to Alabama and be with Nick Saban?
Yeah, and that's a great point. And the first thing is Nick Saban is so comfortable in his own skin as to who he is willing to bring in former NFL head coaches, former collegiate head coaches, you know, guys, he's not worried about somebody coming in there and outranking him in experience or outranking him in position. What he does, and I think it's a mutually beneficial situation. They can come in there and learn a lot of things administratively and just structurally how Nick Saban has put this empire together. And I think that coincides with if they go on and get another collegiate job, or even if they go back into the National Football League and get a head job, because there are so many things. And you and I have friends on that staff that there are so many elements to what Nick Saban does. And it's not just by circumstance, and it's not just by chance that Nick Saban has built the empire that he has built there. Everything is planned out. Everything has a purpose. Everything has a part to the piece of that success that they have. And guys go down there to learn that. They learn that, and Nick Saban is willing. He is willing to take their football knowledge. He's willing to take their expertise and use it. And at the same time, he's able to share the expertise that he has with them. I mean, it's a wonderful thing. I don't know why if you were a coach, a head coach, are that was out of a job, and you had a chance to go down there and be an analyst and be around that and be a, and understand and see how he has put that thing together, why would you not want to do that?
Six national championships in the last 12 years in this playoff era. Pretty, pretty darn impressive on that. Mac, let's kind of talk a little bit about this season overall. As you evaluate and as we look back at this season, we'll start with college and move into pros. I've really tried to evaluate different teams, different programs, different coaches. But how do you evaluate this past year that was so COVID-19 dominated? We had, you know, in college football, spring practice done away with. You could not recruit. You could not have players on campus. You couldn't bring players in early. All the meetings were with Zoom. You had parents to worry about, families to worry about, your own family to worry about, kids to worry about, facilities being closed. No fans in the stands. Fans look at it one way. How should administrators, you think, look at this year from a collegiate standpoint?
Well, I think, first of all, I mean, it was a tremendous challenge to your organizational skills. And when I say organization, I'm talking, you know, collegiately, everybody that's involved, because there were so many moving parts to it. And the thing about it, Doug, to me was, yeah, we as coaches, you and I have been coaches for a long time. All of our friends are coaches. We are creatures of habit. We are creatures of habit. We are used to a regimen. We're used to things being, you know, in certain blocks of time and everything being time sensitive. The COVID-19 threw all of that out the window. And so basically what you were charged with as a coach and as a university was being able to fit everything that you had done that had been so regimented into a brand new environment, a brand new world. And so to me, anything that you got out of it, first of all, just being able to play games was amazing to me. It was amazing to me collegiately because you had a huge population to deal with, because you were not only dealing with trying to protect a football team, you know, over 100 players, you were not only trying to protect them from a COVID infection and on a daily basis, but all the students also, everybody that was involved with that. So as an administrator, when I'm looking at that, I'm not going to judge my coaches on how many games they won and lost. What I'm going to judge them on is how well they were able to keep things together in a minimal way, in a very maximum challenging way. To me, the collegiate game, it was amazing to me as well as they kept it together. And look, because you got so many, it's so disparate in the collegiate world as to how much money you have to be able to combat things with, that's going to make a big difference. But from the Power Fives, even on down to the Division III schools, Doug, that called around the country and tried to find games and would find out who their opponents were going to be on the Wednesday of a week because somebody had to cancel, all of those things. If I'm an administrator in the collegiate game, it's not going to be the win and loss. It's how my football coach and my athletic director, and it's how my staff were able to handle a myriad of obstacles and still keep things moving forward.
With that said, did it surprise you, or has it surprised you, the number of programs who have changed coaches this year? There were several more than I thought that there would be.
You know, there really were, but when you start looking at the programs that have changed, and again, I go back to what is a very, very defining factor in all of this. Those programs that changed, everybody lost money this year, but those programs that changed, they have money. They have money, and they were able to take that, absorb that, and still try to move forward. You know, a lot of your schools that don't have the financial wherewithal, like most of your Power Five schools do, and their tiers within the Power Five too, you didn't see many changes at those places just because they could not absorb the loss in income that everybody had this year, plus absorb putting together a new staff.
We're seeing coaches who have opted to not take another job, to lay out. Now, part of it certainly because of buyout money. But, Mac, I think the other part of it is, too, you talk to any college coach. I'll let you speak on the pro level. Any college coach you talk to, every year is a stressful year because wins are so important. But this year, was just, it just blew all that out of the water. I think you're going to, you see a lot of these coaches who are going to be taking a year off just to kind of recharge and set back and probably see what other opportunities are out there. That normally doesn't happen, but we're seeing a good bit of it this year.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you, Coach, because as you said, I mean, you and I spent our whole lives doing this, you know, at very high levels, and we know what the stress factor is, and you know that going into it. You know that's what your lifestyle is going to be. But as you said, that you and I have both coached through, you know, a lot of years. I mean, I was a head coach in the National Football League, you know, during 9/11. I coached through a strike. I coached through a lockout. I've been through some unusual circumstances in my National Football League career. But neither one of us, you've been through a lot of things, too, in your career. Neither one of us have been through anything like this. Because we were trained and we had a background and we had something to fall back on if things got a little bit hard, just, you know, football wise, because that's the life that we live and that's how we're trained. But this had no game plan to it. This had no precedent to it. So I agree with you. Those coaches that went through it, that lost their jobs, they may be willing to take a sabbatical and try to recharge.
Easy to talk about, easy, but not easy to really nail it down. Mac, I think, you know, I would agree on a couple of things. So when you, we always talk about top jobs, this is a top job, that's a top job, but without question, one of the very best jobs, and we're going to get into why, opened up this year, the University of Texas. Steve Sarkisian takes that job, and we discussed him a little bit earlier, but let's dig into that a little bit. Here was a young man who we first saw as a coordinator for Pete Carroll at Southern Cal, got a head job at Washington, then came back to Southern Cal as head football coach, had some off-the-field problems, some substance abuse problems, quite frankly, was fired mid-season. I'm sure humiliating to him and embarrassing to him. Let's talk a little bit, Mac, about how he's dug himself out of the hole and went to Alabama, another kind of a reclamation project, if you will, for Nick Saban, stayed there as an analyst, then went to the Atlanta Falcons for a couple of years, then came back to Atlanta. And I say all that to say all this. I think Texas is getting a tremendous football coach who has – a lot of experience as a head coach, certainly knows what it feels like to be on the bottom. I don't root for Texas very much, as you know, but I'm going to be rooting for Steve Sarkisian.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you, Doug, and I agree with you on a lot of those major points because he was a very successful coach. And then, as you said, had some real personal issues that were very public that he has admitted that he worked through, and he was willing – he was willing, as you said, you know, he go to Alabama as an analyst and try to refine himself. Then he went back in the National Football League, then came back to Alabama. And so to me, it's not only a personal victory in the personal things that he's overcome, but he reworked and he reorganized himself professionally, too. And so on doing that, all of a sudden now, and it just goes into what we were talking about earlier in this segment, we were talking about why people go there to learn how to do it in the collegiate world from Nick Saban. Think of all the knowledge that Steve Sarkisian is taking into that job that he did not take into the Washington or the USC job. Think of everything that he's taken into there. Plus, he's going in with a national championship, you know, on his shoulders. And I agree with you. And the University of Texas, again, as I say, I know Texas. That's where I grew up. And then I was a Southwest Conference guy. I've had University of Texas all of my life. I know what they are. I know what they have been. And I also know what they have not been in the last several years. And you talk about having everything that you need down there, but there was a lot lacking and missing. And I think Steve Sarkisian, not just football-wise, but organizational-wise, will be able to give them what they need.
You've coached all over this country, and this is not hyperbole talking here. Mac, I think Texas is easily a top 10 job, and I think with the right person, because of the recruiting, with all the money, because of the academics and the university before them, I think it's a top five job, and I would not be surprised in a couple of 3 years to see Sarkisian having them back up in the playoffs. I really wouldn't.
Yeah, Doug, and I agree. And you've got to admit, I mean, you and I are deep into this profession. We know good from bad in this profession. And just the footprint and the structure of what the University of Texas is, it's massive. It's massive. And you dig down underneath the layers, a recruiting base, an alumni base, money-wise, facilities, anything you want, a great university academically. It has everything that you would ever want there. And we've talked before, and you and I have both talked on the air, and we've talked privately about why they haven't been able to do it. And I think Sarkisian will bring some of that in there. And two of the biggest reasons I think that they have fallen off, and as I said, you and I have said this publicly before, and I think we both agree, yeah, they get the best, they get as good a recruits as anybody in the country. They never de-recruit them, and they never develop them. And that's what has happened. And I think Sarkisian, you know, with the experience that he's had with Nick Saban, because Nick Saban does that I just mentioned, better than anybody in the country. Better than anybody in the country. Gets those 5 and 4 stars and whatever that means, but gets some of the best high school players in the country. And when they come out of there, they're grown men as far as knowing how to work and football-wise. I think that's what Sarkisian can bring to the University of Texas, which they have been lacking for a lot of years.
Well, sometime around 9 o'clock Central Time tomorrow night, we're going to know who's going to be playing in the Super Bowl. Coach Mack and I'll be back to talk about it here, right here on Coach to Coach. And let me talk as we go to break about barbecue sandwiches. You know, here it is, winter about to get over, hopefully. Hot barbecue sandwiches we think about during summertime, but you know, you're just a pooch punt away from some of the very best you've ever put in your mouth. That's Stroud's Barbecue. Location near you, stroudsbarbecue.com, all the fixings. And don't forget, you know, there's not a really good barbecue place out there if you don't have outstanding banana pudding. You're really just kind of, you know, that's a quote cherry on top. Stroud's Barbecue, one near you. And remember, you're just a pooch punt away from a Stroud store.
Hey, Dad, what's up?
Nah, I got buyer's remorse.
Yeah, that shirt is pretty hideous. Did you keep the receipt?
What? No, we're paying for health coverage that isn't right for us.
Oh, then talk to Farm Bureau Health Plans. They can help you choose the right plan for less than you think. And you can sign up any time of the year.
Thanks, I will. Now, what's wrong with this shirt?
Go to FBHP.com or talk to your local representative today. Farm Bureau Health Plans. Plan on us.
Well, the best.
A moment of silence to remember our dear friend.
sorry. Oh, man.
Life can be uncomfortable. Your home doesn't have to be. With air conditioners, furnaces, and heat pumps installed by a Ring Pro partner, you can feel comfortable even when you can't be comfortable.
Really?
Trust the expert installation and service of your local Ream Pro partner. Visit ReamProPartnersTN.com to find one near you.
1 in 3 adults has...
Welcome back in. This is Coach to Coach. And, well, let's talk a little conference championship games in the NFL. Tomorrow, the 24th, Bucks and Green Bay. Mm-hmm. And the Bills and the Chiefs. And I guess one way to look at it, Mac, would be this. You got two Hall of Famers playing in the first one, and you got two younger guys that are playing like Hall of Famers this year. Ought to be good matchups. Let's start with Green Bay hosting the Bucks. Again, you got the GOAT. I think everybody refers to him as that now. And then you got a guy that maybe with another Super Bowl win or two that he possibly could have had would be right up there with him. What are you seeing in this game?
No, I mean, I think you put it perfectly, first of all, as far as the disparity in the quarterbacks. And let's talk about Packers and Bucks first. You know, these teams have played earlier in the year, and you can throw that game completely out. Because in the National Football League, you know, you can play people more than once. But when you play them in the regular season and then you morph into and you both get to the championship game and you play each other again, there's not a whole lot you can take from the first game because teams change during a 17-week season quite a bit. Let's start about with the Packers. Don't mistake Aaron Rodgers back there as a guy that's just going to spin it all around. Matt LaFleur, when he came in there as a young head coach, he has meshed with the future Hall of Famer Aaron Rodgers. That offense that they are running now with the RPOs and the play action off of it, the reduced splits, the transcontinentals, which are those crossing routes, All of that stuff is beautiful to watch, and we know how off schedule that Aaron Rodgers can be and be tremendously successful with that. But their running game is vital to what they do. Everything that Matt LaFleur does with that offense, he is a clear back to a Mike Shanahan disciple. That's where this offense has stemmed from. And they were able to marry that with the West Coast offense that Aaron Rodgers was used to. It is a devastating offense because it's got tremendous, tremendous balance. Now you look over on the other side, Tom Brady left New England and he chose to go down to Tampa Bay and really, let's say honestly, to see if he could win or to prove that he could win a Super Bowl away from Bill Belichick. Well, he goes down there with a veteran coach in Bruce Arians. Bruce Arians' offense is completely different than anything Tom Brady played in, you know, for McDaniel and for Bill Belichick there in New England. It's a no risk it, no biscuit offense where they're going to spin it down the field. They've got a beautiful young running back there too, but they've got receivers that can go and go up and get it and go long. And look, Tom Brady elevates those around him. You know, you and I both know that during our careers, the great quarterbacks, regardless of ability, their biggest ability is to elevate those around them. And this is going to be a wonderful matchup. If you're asking me what I think about it, I think Green Bay is on such a roll right now, they're going to be hard to beat in Lambeau Field.
Let's talk just a little bit about that. Just on the face of it, team from Florida going up to Wisconsin to play. Now, that sounds good, but the thing about the Bucs, Mac, is this. About midway through the season, you saw that mixture of coach and quarterback and offensive football really start playing very, very, very well together. And they're playing about as well as you can possibly play. And, hey, let's don't forget, defensively, statistically, I don't know where they rank, but, boy, they got guys that fly around. They got a lot of athletes on the defensive side of the ball. But you like Green Bay.
I like Green Bay, but I'm glad you brought up the defense, especially with the Bucs. Todd Bowles, their defensive coordinator, he was Bruce Arians' defensive coordinator when Bruce was a head coach, you know, at Arizona. And then Todd went on and got the head job at the Jets and was not successful, but that's not surprising. It's hard to be successful at the Jets with what's going on. But Todd Bowles is an excellent defensive coordinator, and especially the last 6 weeks of the season, Doug, this defense was playing as well as any defense in the National Football League. You are 100% right. But I've coached in a lot of games at Lambeau because I spent 10 years with the Bears. I've been to playoff games up there. I've been up there with other teams that I've been. Lambeau at this time of year, Lambeau in January, it's different. Now, there's not going to be loaded up with people in the stands, but those cheese heads that are there, it's going to be different. Now, they asked Tom Brady about this. Of course, you know, Tom Brady played in New England for all of those years. And so they asked him, how is it going to be up there? And he said, it's going to be a little cool. You know, that's what he said. He said, it's going to be just a little cool. So this is going to be a really good football game.
Give me 30 seconds on Devin White. I don't know that I've seen a better defensive performance in the playoffs ever than he put on last week.
No, he had a great GPS to the ball. That's what I like to say. You know, I spent a lot of years coaching linebackers in the National Football League, and GPS to the ball and instincts, especially in big ball games, are important. This guy is all over the place. And you can tell now as a second year player, he understands, he gets it. Always playing linebacker in the National Football League because of the speed of the game, Doug, it's always eyes before feet. He knows where his eyes are now, and he's getting there fast.
The evening game, Bills, Chiefs in Kansas City. Windy, Midwest, windy there. Got about 2 minutes left in this segment. Give me your thoughts on that ball game.
Again, you've got two, and Mahomes, you know, the question is, will Mahomes play? And they say, you know, the early thought was Mahomes is in concussion protocol. Well, he's really not in concussion protocol. He didn't get hit in the head. What he did is he got basically, you know, his got choked out. What he did is why he passed out. So anyway, expecting Mahomes to play in this ball game, Kansas City, the offense that they run, everybody knows what that offense is, what Andy Reid and Mahomes can do. They've got an Olympic track team with their skilled people up there. I mean, they are as comfortable with a football in their hands as they are with a relay baton. They can all really run and move it around. Defensively, Steve Spagnuolo has that defense playing as well as it's ever played. Leslie Frazier at Buffalo is going to have to do a lot of things as a defensive coordinator to be able to keep this thing in sync with what's going on. And again, this is young Josh Allen. I've never seen a quarterback improve his accuracy. Most of the time, Doug, you say, you know, there's a lot of things you can teach, but you can't teach accuracy. Well, he's proven that wrong. He came into the league as one of the most inaccurate throwers, strong arm, great athlete, but now he is really, really dialing it up. So I like the Chiefs in this ball game just because they're at Arrowhead, but it's not going to be a runaway.
Last few days, again, leading up to tomorrow's game, looks like, and I don't know all the protocols of the protocol, but looks like a Mahomes is going to be playing in this ball game. All right, we'll take our last break. And one of the things that Coach Mack and I have in common, we come from small towns. He from Texas, me from Oklahoma. And Mac, one of the things I know that we love is communities, and nobody does communities better than Wilson Bank and Trust. They are a community bank. They got 28 locations in 9 Middle Tennessee counties, not a statewide bank, not a national bank. They're community banks. And when you go in to see them, Mac, they know who you are.
Yeah, Doug, I grew up, as you said, in a very small town in West Texas, and the community bank there was everything. It was everything, and it wasn't just going in and being able to be, you know, you weren't treated like a number. They knew exactly who you were. They knew who you were. They knew who your family was, and they understood what you needed. And it was really, I can still remember going in with my grandfather to the community bank in that small town that I grew up in, and it was really a sense of security when you went in there. And I know very much being a community bank and being a service to the people there, it's huge. And you can't get that in the big institutionalized banks.
Fast local decisions. That's what a community bank's all about. And Middle Tennessee's community bank, that's Wilson Bank and Trust.
Hello, football fans. Football season is here and expectations are high. This is Ronnie Bowling of Brentwood Hearing Center. Meeting your expectations of better hearing is always the goal of our doctors of audiology. From diagnosis to demonstration to providing you the most recent device technology, we're determined to exceed your expectations of a tailored hearing solution. Give us a call today at 615-377-0420 or learn more at BrentwoodHearingCenter.com. We hope to see you soon.
Hey, all you sports fans.
When you drink, well, after one drink, you feel confident. A few more, and calling your ex at 1 a.m. seems like a great idea. And you're pretty sure the secret to a great taco is 4-day-old macaroni. The bottom line, drunk you doesn't make great decisions. So you're risking a DUI or worse if you count on him to get you home. Plan before you party. Get home safe. Paid for by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office.
Hello, football fans. Football
and dog lovers, it's Mike Keith. When it's time for the big game, big fans need big TVs. And at Double Dogs, you can even satisfy big appetites. With choices like Black Angus burgers, wings tossed in homemade sauces, and dog bowl nachos, Double Dogs will make sure that you have the fuel you need at lunch or dinner while never having to miss a game. So whether you have 2 legs or 4, you can cheer on and chow down at Double Dogs, located in cities across Tennessee.
You know that feeling? Like
on 104.5 The Zone.
Welcome back in. We're talking college football. We're talking pro football. And, well, it didn't get around to everything we want to talk about today, but we got 31 more shows to talk about it. Mac, let's start with the new hires in the NFL. Won't go through all of them, but without question, don't know how it's going to end up. Urban Meyer back in coaching, 3-time National Coach of the Year, 4-time National Coach of the Year, 3 national championships, 2 at Florida, 1 at Ohio State. Tell us a little bit about what you know about him and going to the Jags, which you certainly know a lot about the Jags after your many, many years here with the Titans.
Coach, I think it's an excellent hire. Let me tell you why. There's a lot of things that go into perusing a job. I interviewed for 3 head jobs in the National Football League, got 2 of them. And I know that during the interview process, I looked at a lot of things. Jacksonville has everything somebody of Urban Meyer's stature would want as he goes into the National Football League. They've got a good young base of players, number one. That's important. They didn't have success on the field, but it's not because they did not have a good base of young players. The second thing that they have is they've got $73 million in cap money in a year that's going to be very truncated cap-wise for everybody. They've got more cap space than anybody in the National Football League, and cap space is everything in the National Football League, especially when you're trying to go after free agents, which they will. And the third thing they have is they have draft choices. They have theirs, and they have other people's that they've accumulated. They've got tremendous draft choices and a number of them. He's going into a great situation, and I think his organizational skills, he's already proven that with everything that you've said. This is a big hire. And he's got a patient owner in Khan. That is a huge, huge get for him.
We expect Trevor Lawrence, of course, to be that number one pick. Matt, got just a minute left, and we'll talk more about this, but Arthur Smith, I've heard you discuss on Titans broadcast so much about the great job that he's done, the way he worked his way up through the organization. He will be the new head coach with the Atlanta Falcons.
And then you could not hire somebody with any better work ethic and somebody that can communicate from the front office all the way down through the locker room. I know him very well. I work very closely with him on a Titans staff, have kept up with his entire career. What he was able to do with the Titans offensively was marvelous. Everybody in the league recognized it, but he is a people person also. And this is a guy, Doug, you and I know one thing that you appreciate as a coach that's a grind, and a coach that's genuine goes a long way towards winning a locker room. Arthur Smith is all of that.
We are out of time. We got a lot to talk about. For Dave McGinnis, Doug Matthews saying we'll see you next Saturday, 7:00, right here on 104.5 The Zone for Coast to Coach, presented by Farm Bureau Health.
What happens to your decision making?